wildlife and the woods are just outside your way. So get outside and find it in the Maine outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your outdoors hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Or a poor imitation of V. Paul Reynolds. This is Matt Dunlap, along with Jim Layton and Norm Plord. Welcome to Maine Outdoors. If you like to hunt, fish, trap, snowmobile, camp, bike, hike, birdwatch, snowshoe, or do anything in the Maine Outdoors, this is the show for you. And we're going to talk about snowshoeing in just a minute here, because we got some fun stuff to talk about tonight. Jim?
We do.
Yeah, turn up your microphone so the people can see you talking.
Can you hear me now?
Not really, but you keep working on that, and we're going to keep going. So...
Can't imagine.
So this hour, Jim Layton, Norm Plord, and I, along with our special guest, and you, will explore the Maine outdoors. If you would like to participate, the number to call is 1-800-966-1039. Do you have it now?
I do.
Look at you.
Yeah.
You were kind of whispering there earlier.
Well, I was screaming if you want to know the truth.
It was very sultry from this side of the microphone.
Mm-hmm. There's that glass.
So V. Paul Reynolds is out of town. We hope he's having a good time. Is he down south?
He is. He is. He's way down almost into the, what do they call it, the islands there at the end of Florida?
Keys?
The Keys. Keys. Yeah. Keys. Almost to the Keys. He's almost got the Keys to the Keys.
He's in the gateway of the Keys.
He is.
Well, good for him. And this, you are listening to Jim Layton. And Norm Plord's back there, too, somewhere. You back
around the corner,
right,
yes.
Around the corner.
At the corner. The corner.
In the other studio, Lyle. Tonight we have a very special guest, an old friend of ours on the show, and
yes.
And long time, hasn't done it for a while, but a long time writer for the Northwood Sporting Journal himself. Legendary game warden.
He is.
Yes, Dave Georgia. Welcome, Dave, back to the show.
Yeah, thank you.
It's been a couple of years, hasn't it?
It has been a couple of years.
We're going to talk about some of the work that Dave's been doing with the Maine Warden Service Association.
Foundation.
Maine Warden Service Foundation. He's kind of taken on the role as sort of the more or less official historian of the Maine Warden Service. And he's got some great stories we're going to talk about here tonight. And if you have a question for Dave or us, you know, again, the number to call is 1-800-966-1039. Before we get into our conversation with Dave, Jim, I think we're going to do something called Outdoor Digest. We do that periodically on the show. And that'll conclude with a trivia question, which is going to be good for an enormous prize of some distinction.
We haven't figured it out
yet. We're figuring it out before the commercial break.
How about a spare tire? Something like that.
I got an old stove I just dropped off at the transfer station if you want to go get the grates off it.
Yeah.
They still work, don't they?
They
still work. Okay. Break the grates.
So anyway, Outdoor Digest is brought to us each and every week by my favorite outdoor publication, the Northwood Sporting Journal.
You bet.
So we're in ice fishing season. Check that ice. There are some thin patches out there.
There's some open ice on Fields Pond. I mean open water.
Open ice?
Open water.
That's dangerous to have open
on
ice.
On the inlet.
Yeah.
The inlet.
Anywhere where there's a brook feeding in or a spring, you want to be careful.
Yep. Moving water.
Moving water will do it. So you want to be careful out there on the ice, especially if you're taking a snowmobile or something heavier.
Yeah.
Happens every season. Somebody... takes a $50,000 pickup truck and makes a mooring out of it.
They do. A big anchor.
Which I think the Fish and Wildlife Department still frowns on. Is that correct, Dave?
They do frown on that.
All right. So, and since we are into January, it's in the end, and I'm sure most of you have thought of it already, but I always like to do that little reminder. Make sure you get your license.
Yes.
And you can do it easy online, maine.gov/IFNW. A couple things going on that I happen to know about. February 6th, Penobscot County, the Penobscot Fly Fishers, which they have their meetings at the Penobscot County Conservation Association. They've got a meeting coming up next week, February 6th, or a week and a half.
About a week and a half. Yeah,
these 31-day months really throw me off. So they're having their monthly meeting, and inland fisheries and wildlife fisheries biologist Greg Burr will be their guest speaker at their monthly meeting.
Whoa.
And their monthly meetings are quite good. I've been to them. I've been a speaker at them. They have good speakers. And really, the Penobscot, and they're in the middle of their fly tying seminars right now.
Yeah, we're halfway through.
Halfway through, and then they're going to start the advanced, not really advanced, but it's like, what do you call it, Norm?
They do call it the advanced or intermediate.
Intermediate classes after that.
Yeah.
And they're active all year round. If you want to learn a little bit more about that great organization, check out PenobscotFlyFishers.com.
They've got the Cabin Fever Lever coming up. I believe it's the first weekend in March.
Yep.
We're gonna talk. Sure it is.
I want to know what kind of fish you catch with an intermediate fly. I never had one.
Well, it's in the slot.
It's a slot fish.
In the slot limit.
Slot fish right there.
Okay.
That's, you know, I have all the answers, Jim. Just
I
ask.
Know you do. That's why I ask.
Our old friend Peter Cowan has been on the show, the Bee Whisperer. He's doing some bee education classes with the Bangor Adult Education. Actually starting tomorrow.
Really?
January 28th. And those classes run the 28th, the 4th, and the 11th from 6 to 8. Call 992-5522 to see if you can book a slot for that. And if you've had some problems with your colonies collapsing, the tough weather, the alternating weather is hard on bees, he's going to have a free class at his shop to help. If you've lost a colony or think your colonies are at risk due to harsh conditions, it'll be at his shop on February 9th, 8:30 a.m., and it's free, 236 Main Road in Hamden. Give him a shout at 299-6948. Slots are limited, and they fill fast.
I got to tell you something.
Why don't you go know ahead the old tell us, adage tell us
about
all.
The,
tell us
you
all.
Know the old adage about the higher up the bee houses are, the higher the snow is going to be?
Yeah.
Well, take a look at our snow, and all of the ones hives that I've seen are way up in the top of trees.
It's coming, is what you're telling us.
It must be. But so far, I think they're wrong.
All right. We've heard enough from you, Jim. Okay. So... So shows, as Norm said, the shows are coming right around the corner. So keep an eye open on this show, an ear peeled and an eye open on this show for our upcoming announcements on the Sportsman Show calendar.
Yes.
And usually the Cabin Fever Reliever is the first, followed by Eastern Maine, and then the State of Maine Sportsman Show in Augusta, and concluding the season with the world famous
there you go.
Presque Isle Fish and Game Club show, which is a great show up in Presque Isle.
Yep.
Do they hold it at the old place down by the river?
No, they do it at the University of Maine.
They do.
It's a great venue, and it's a good show. They have a lot of vendors. They have a lot of displays. They have a lot of demonstrations. It's really, I think, it's a small show, but it's every bit as informative and entertaining as any of the other shows.
That is where my son learned to shoot.
No kidding.
It is. That's where he was born, Presque Isle.
There you go. Good place.
Yep.
No bad reason to go there, and one of the best is for the Sportsman Show.
Great people.
Now we have some derbies coming up, Jim.
We do.
You buckle up.
Oh, boy.
You buckle up. Here we go.
Get your bait.
Yep, get your bait. So February 2nd, we're just going to cover next weekend, okay? We're not going to do the whole season. So coming up, and this is also one that we've hosted the sponsors of, and that is the Pushaw Lake Snowmobile Club is going to have their derby coming right up next week. They're having their annual fishing derby from sunrise to 5 p.m. on Saturday and sunrise to 3 p.m. on Sunday, February 3rd on Little Pushaw Lakes. Clubhouse is at 243 Whitmore Landing Road. And if you've listened to this show for any length of time, you've listened to us talk with Jim Fahey, the game warden,
yes.
about you know the grand touring breakfast that they are famous for putting on. So they have door prizes and case prizes for fish. Tickets are $3 each or 4 for 10. Tickets allow you to enter fish caught for the cash prizes, and you get entered for all door prizes. All proceeds go to the Promote Snowmobiling and Trail Maintenance in Hudson, the famous town of Hudson.
Yes.
Also on the 2nd, the new Sharon Snow Riders out there in western Maine are having a derby on Crowell Pond. The weigh-in is on the ice, $100 cash prize. Contact Matthew Lemieux at 778-6476. Also on the 2nd, Oak Hill Boosters Club is having a derby on Sabattis Pond. And the weigh-in is at Route 132 Wales Sanborn Farm. Contact Joe Hinckley at 740-5967. $3,500 in cash prizes.
Wow.
Bring your traps. You can't win if you don't fish. The Oxford Hill Reeds is having a derby on Norway Lake. The weigh-in's at the Red Schoolhouse. Contact Brian Ellis, 890-7318. Total cash prize amount, $500.
Wow.
Just laying there waiting for you, Jim.
Hey, look, enough to buy bait for the rest of the winter.
He wouldn't have to buy bait for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Tremont Consolidated School is having a derby, and they are not kidding around. It's going to be open to all bodies of water on Mount Desert Island, and there are some big uns down there.
Yeah.
Contact Susan McIsaac at 244-7770. $8,000, Jim. Well, it is the island.
Yeah.
Everything's a little bit more expensive down there, so they upped the prize amount a little bit. Sheepscot Lake Fish and Game is having, not to be outdone by the Tremont folks, they are having a derby on all open Maine waters. The weigh-in is at the clubhouse at 1579 Route 3, Palermo. Contact Rod Glidden at 993-2625 or 485-0190. $800 in cash prizes. Two more, and then we're going to be done with that.
Does that include the quarries down there on the island?
I would think so.
Boy,
the quarries. Nice. If there's any fish in them.
Boy, there are.
Yeah, if it's legal to fish, it says all open bodies of water.
Wow.
I don't know. You want to go out in those quarries, you're on your own. Those things are deep.
Yeah, I know they are, but there's some big fish in there.
Okay, February 2nd and 3rd, Moose Stompers Fishing Derby. Bodies of water are Nickerson Lake, Mill Pond, Russell Pond, Maduxnakeg River, and the weigh-in is at Nana's Military Street Store. Contact Jane Torres at 532-4216. $1,000 in prizes. And the last one we're going to talk about this week. Actually, it's not the last one we're going to talk about this week. February 3rd, Town of Oakland, in the Belgrade Lakes. The weigh-in's at the Atwood Elementary School. Eric Seekins is your contact at 465-7357. It's kids only. There's no cash prize.
Whoa.
So you can't go at any rate.
No suckers, no candy, no nothing.
You're going to go where there's $8,000 in prizes anyway, aren't you?
Whoa, you bet.
So that's before we conclude Outdoor Digest, which we are proud to host with the sponsorship of the Northwood Sporting Journal every week. I'd like to talk about today's fishing we did today, Jimmy.
Yes.
We had the Maine Youth Fishing Game Association hosted the first of two free fishing days for kids under 16, because Pickerel Pond in Township 32 Middle Division, for those of you who are keeping score at home, is in northern Hancock County. It's kids-only fishing. And I think people thought the same thing I thought, that it was going to be pretty dodgy out there with all this rain we've had and snow and mix. That would be slushy and gloppy, and it was actually quite nice. It was a big sheet of ice. We probably had a couple hundred people come out.
How much ice?
Good 10 inches, 12 inches.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. It was plenty of ice. And it did catch as many fish as we thought we would catch, but we did get a couple nice ones. The biggest one was 15 and a half inch brook trout caught by 15-year-old Douglas Hill of Greenbush.
Wow.
So he can have that mounted for free if
good
he wishes.
Good for him. Good
courtesy of our partners out in the world who put this on. Great time. We got a new kitchen, so we were grilling hot dogs instead of boiling them. And it was a lot of fun. We had some volunteers from the University of Maine. A couple women from the soccer team were helping us in the kitchen. Did a great job. They're clean freaks, and so they cleaned that kitchen better than it's ever been cleaned before. So that's important because we're coming back out there on February 9th to do it again.
Whoa.
So
that's great.
So there you go. And unless you have something out there, you got anything?
Well, did you happen to see that tog that was caught up at Moosehead?
Wasn't that a humdinger, huh?
It sure was. My father had been proud of that.
Yes, sir.
20.66 pounds.
Wow.
Wow.
Well, it's all
I haven't seen that one.
It's all that work that Paul Johnson did all those years in the smelt, isn't it?
That's right. It worked.
It did work. They've got some big fish there now. I haven't heard complaints about the fishery up there in some years. That's a good sign.
They've been catching some big brook trout this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's wonderful.
So it's all good stuff. And you can probably hear more about that if you want to go meet up with Greg Burr at the Penobscot Fly Fishers on the 6th.
Yes.
So there you go. So that concludes Outdoor Digest, which is brought to us each and every week by the Northwood Sporting Journal, which happens to be at least my favorite outdoor publication. You haven't said very much about that this week, Jim.
Well, I love it, and I love the pictures in there. They're beautiful. And have you noticed the different paper that they're using?
Yeah.
Much better.
Yeah.
Much better.
I got to tell you, one of my favorite parts of that magazine is the real estate section. I always think, one of these days, I'm going to get a camp.
I sold a camp through there.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did. A few years ago.
Another reason to love the Sporting Journal, isn't it?
All right,
so we're going to take a quick commercial break. Before we do, though, Jim, we have a trivia question.
All right.
I don't know if this is going to be a stumper or not. The simplest ones always seem to be the stumpers. So here we go. You want to read it, Dave?
Sure.
It's the underlined part in my format there.
Okay.
Don't read the answer, just the question.
Okay. What causes deer to shed their antlers?
What causes deer to shed their antlers? If you think you know the answer, give us a call at 1-800-966-1039. We'll be back with more in a minute here on Maine Outdoors. Well, if you're joining us just now at this late hour, we want to welcome you to Maine Outdoors with Jim Layton and Norm Plourd with our special guest, Game Warden Dave Georgia, the legendary Game Warden himself. And we have a pending trivia question, what we like to call an outstanding trivia question. And the question is, what causes deer to shed their antlers? I think we have a couple people standing by, don't we?
We have a couple.
All right. Bring them on.
First caller, go ahead.
Hello, you're on Maine Outdoors.
Hello.
Hello. Think you know the answer?
I think so. I think it's the same thing that controls the rest of the world. It's hormones would be, in this case, a drop in testosterone.
It's actually, you're on the right track, but it's not the trigger cause. But
no.
Oh.
Well, thank you.
Hey, where are you calling from tonight, just so we know?
Lovely Newburgh.
Lovely Newburgh. Well, say hello to everybody in Newburgh for us.
Will do.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Thank you. Bye.
Anybody else there, Norm?
Yeah, we do. Caller number two. Go ahead.
On line 36. So what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Well, this is Tom calling from Sangerville.
All right, Tom. What's going on? You think you know the
how
answer?
How about changing the blood flow going to the antlers?
Well, that's also a part of it, but it's also not the trigger cause.
Oh, well, okay.
All right. Well, thank you for your call. I knew this was going to be a stumper, Jim.
Well, so did I.
This is one probably going to have some aspiring biologist that's going to call in with the correct answer.
Well, if they don't get it, I've got a guess.
You've got another caller right now.
All right. Good evening. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Dave. I'm calling from Bass Harbor.
Hey, Dave from Bass Harbor. I think you know the answer to our trivia question?
Well, I'm going to give it a shot. I think it has to do more with the light cycle.
You said like daylight cycle?
Yeah, the daylight cycle. The change from, summer where it's daylight's long and the fall where it's really short.
Well, let me ask our judge here, the infamous Game Warden, Dave Georgia. Dave, do you think that's correct?
Well, that's the one that you were looking for was a number of daylight hours.
That's right. That's right. It's hormonal changes.
Well, there you go.
That are triggered by the number of hours of sunlight. As the days grow longer and good nutrition becomes available, buck deer begin growing their antlers, and that growing stops as the days get shorter and mating season approaches and their hormones change yet again. And then those antlers harden and they shed their velvet. And then after the shortest day of the year in late December, the deer's body stops supporting the antlers altogether and they shed them. And then the process repeats itself. And that's what the difference, Jim. This is another trivia question we've had before, between an antler and a horn.
Matthew, my wife asked me this question last week, and I told her they shed their horns so that they can't fight with each other, and that way the little ones would live.
Between that and your weather reports, you'll be sleeping in the barn tonight. So, Dave, stay on the phone.
With the dog again.
We have a prize for you, and what we're going to do is we are going to give you a one-year subscription to the Northwood Sporting Journal.
Oh, that is awesome.
Yeah, courtesy of the show. And get you and Norm will take your name and address, and we'll get that out to the folks at the mail room right away.
Oh, great! Thank you. I got time for a question.
You sure do.
So thinking about this with the light period and all, plants do the same thing, in this hemisphere and the other, but down around the equator, the plants will grow on a 12 or a 6 month cycle. They'll go. They won't go too long, and they'll just, even though the 12 hours a day, every day,
yep,
they'll still go through the cycle. Are there any antlered animals down there that do it just on a regular monthly cycle?
That
every
I don't.
Once they lose?
That I don't know. My knowledge is kind of confined to the Penobscot River Valley. So,
okay. Well, good enough.
The state of Maine.
That's most antlered animals do shed their antlers at some point, whether you're talking about elk or caribou, deer, moose.
Right.
The bighorn sheep, they don't shed. Those are actually, they're keratin. They're like fingernails.
Yeah, yeah.
Hair,
they're horns. They're not going to lose them.
That's right.
Wondering about the antler stuff.
No. Cool. We'll have to research that. Maybe make that a trivia question sometime.
Oh, geez, that'd be a toughie.
Yeah. Well, thanks for your call, Dave.
Yep, thank you very much.
Hang on, Dave.
Hang on. Don't hang up.
I'll be here.
All right. So now we have a few minutes left before we have to take another commercial break. And before we do that, we want to introduce our special guest tonight, who's been very patient with us, Dave Georgia. And you live up in Greenfield?
Greenfield Township.
Many years in the Maine Warden Service. Was Warden of the Year a few years ago. And we are talking today before we came into the show together because we had the ice fishing day today. That has been just about 20 years since we started talking about forming the Maine Youth Fish and Game Association. And Dave was a big part of that. In fact, Dave was the one, and when we were, you know, sitting around the Old Town Museum trying to figure out what we were going to be and what our purpose was and how we're going to stay viable. And if I may quote, and he said, "You guys, you know, you keep talking about hooked on fishing, not on drugs, and youth field days. What, you know, keep talking about youth and kids. Why not make it a youth association?" I thought, hey, what a great idea.
And it took off like wildfire.
And now we're going into a four-week summer camp season for the first time. And that, you know, we've made a lot of improvements. You've got the 100-yard shooting range. You've got all the canoes, got the docks and everything. So it's been quite a journey.
It's been really fantastic if you really think about it. And we started just a little humble beginning right in the Old Town Library just as a – as a gathering place, and before long, we had a log home building donated, and right on a kettle pond stocked with trout. And
Well, the first question is, how serious are we about this?
Right.
You know, and it's like, what are we going to do that's going to go from generation to generation? And now some of those first kids that we worked with have kids of their own. Going to summer camp. And it's, you know, for a lot of folks, I mean, with the modern economy, both parents working, fewer people and fewer people having exposure to the outdoors, and the kids are interested in it, this has been a real big thing. And you were a big part of that back in the day.
Not only myself, but you.
Well, I carried the paperwork. I carried the paperwork back and forth.
We are here, two of the original board members.
Yeah. I'm still on there. I'm the last one. But you started in the warden service, I think, in 1983. Is that correct?
Correct.
So that was my senior year in high school. We're going to learn more about you in a minute when we come back from this quick break. Stay tuned. Maine Outdoors will be back in just a few minutes on Maine Outdoors.
More Maine Outdoors next on 101.3 Augusta, 103.9 Bangor, 95.1 Rockland, the voice of Maine.
And if you joined us late, this is Matt Dunlap along with Jim Layton and Norm Plord with our special guest Dave Georgia. This is Maine Outdoors. Phone's been lighting up all through the commercial break. One of the problems with the show, Norm, is people listen to it. And, you know, we know that Jerry Levine is out past his bedtime, and we've had a couple other greetings from folks. So welcome to all of you. Welcome back. And we were talking with Dave Georgia before we kind of lost track of time and the computer kicked us off about some of the stuff that we've done over the years, including, you know, obviously the Maine Youth Fish and Game Association, your work as a game warden, some of the other things you've done. But you've kind of taken on this new role. And this is what I wanted to talk to you about tonight, you know, because you've been a game warden since 1983. You've done all game warden of the year, and you've taken a special interest in the history of the Maine Warden Service. And you've been working with the Warden Service Foundation. They have a magazine they put out. It's limited publication, but it's a good magazine. And you've been sort of focused on the early history of the Maine Warden Service before they got the green uniforms and became professionalized, starting probably around the 20s or so. One article that you found in particular, I said we wanted to talk a little bit more about snowshoeing. Can I see that for just a second?
Sure.
This is an incredible thing about how things have changed, Norm. Hmm. And this is a newspaper article from 1903, and it's just a paragraph. This is what it says: 150 miles on snowshoes. Okay. Frank J. Durgan of the Forks, one of the wardens of the Department of Inland Fisheries and Game, was in Augusta Wednesday to confer with the commissioners on matters affecting the interests of the service. Mr. Durgan has just returned from a snowshoeing trip of 150 miles through the northern woods. He started from his home at the Forks and traveled to Pierce Pond, thence to Enchanted Lake, Little and Big Spencer, Long Pond, Misery, and Chase Streams, and back again. There was from 3 to 4 feet of snow in the woods, and traveling was easy most of the way.
Wow.
This is before they had Polaris snowmobiles, apparently. Right. He came across 2 moose yards, which there were 5 moose. He saw some deer signs during the 10 days he was out. So, I mean, he was camping out there, too, right?
Yeah, with all that snow, he's covering a lot of miles.
Yeah, and thought they were as plenty as they have been for the last 3 or 4 years. He saw about 40 deer. He found 3 dead deer, which he thinks died of some disease. Only 1 case of poaching came to his notice this winter. So, I mean, think about that. I mean, that's because, you know, we were talking before the show, you know, the legendary game warden Moses Jackson up in our area was famous. 1903. I mentioned that. You know, he was famous for walking from his house in Bradley to his camp up in Crocker Turn, which is about 10, 12 miles.
Yeah, it's in Greenfield Township.
Greenfield Township, right down the road from you. So we have a tough bunch of guys, the game wardens of the early days.
Early days.
They still are. You want to know the truth?
Yeah, well, they are, you know. Yep. The warden service was officially formed in, was it 1880?
1880, March 9th.
No,
1880.
What time?
I don't know. But but what most people don't realize is that there were actually Maine game wardens before 1880.
Yeah, and we've seen in the law that there were moose wardens and trout wardens as early as the 1830s.
1830, the governor appointed one moose warden for every county, and back then there was only 9 counties.
Yeah.
In 1838, fish wardens came about, and one of the very first fish wardens was actually from Bradley, Maine. His father, Bradley Blackman, that's what the town has been named after, and they had some mills on Blackman Stream, again named after the Blackmans. Yep. Francis Blackman was one of the first fish wardens, only had jurisdiction on the Penobscot River and tributaries.
And that's something. So, you know, one of the things I know you've been working on, we keep track of those wardens we've lost in the line of duty. And the first game wardens that were lost were Charles Niles and
Lyman O'Hill.
Lyman O'Hill, who were murdered by a houndsman, guy who was one of the first things the legislature did to try to preserve fish and game was outlaw
deer dogging,
hunting deer with dogs. And the way they used to do it is, and if you're curious about seeing some images of this, it was trying to think of the painter's name. I've lost his name for a second, but I'll come back to me. He painted up in the Adirondacks. It's these famous watercolors of the Adirondacks, and he painted scenes of deer hunting with dogs. And the way they did it, because when deer and Jerry will probably correct me on this, but one of the things that deer tend to do when they're chased is they'll run for water, and so you have their shooters in canoes waiting for them in those long finger lakes. As they'd make their way, try to get away from the dogs, and then your shooters would just paddle up to them and pop them in the head.
It was very effective.
Very effective, and it was prima facie evidence of having hounded a deer to be in possession of one shot in the head, which, you know, caused some problems. Of course, game wardens back then also often were recruited from the ranks of convicted fish and game criminals, theory being that they knew the trade, and they were paid by being allowed to keep half the fine money they collected.
Takes right. One to know one.
Yeah, that's right. And because there are no problems there, right? So, you know, a lot of reforming that went on between about 1905 and 1919 when they finally straightened it out. But that's the climate that Hill and Niles were in. But you think you may have found another one that we are trying to find out what his status was in the warden service. And talk about that fella from Biddeford.
Yeah. In June 1st of 1896, Frederick Milliken, with a K, Milliken, he lived on Wood Island out off of Biddeford, in Biddeford, Biddeford Pool. And there was a couple fellas out there that were known seal hunters and fishermen. And he met them. They actually went on a weekend drunk. And when they came back, the warden met him at the so-called slip right there, the boardwalk, said he wanted to talk to him. And long story short, the two fellas went to their house and kind of just bypassed him. And the warden went to his, donned his vest with his badge, came out, and one of the fellas had a repeater rifle, hunting .44. Yeah. Rifle, and when he went to check the rifle, he shot him point blank right in front of his wife.
Oh, wow.
And so this is, I found newspaper articles from Biddeford as far as the Boston Herald.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to get him recognized on the wall down in Augusta.
And part of the challenge was the government kept really lousy records back then.
They did.
You know, and you know, I found a curious case. I'm trying to track down some records for it myself now. The state treasurer made off about a quarter of the state treasury back in the 1850s. And there's like nothing in the legislative record about it, you know, because they didn't save that stuff back then. So newspapers, as you have found, tend to be the best sources of information from that time because a lot of them archive their papers.
Exactly. And I have a meeting with the chiefs of police. I guess they make the final decision. I have that meeting on February 7th in Portland, and I'm going to pitch my case to them and see if I can get Mr. Milliken recognized.
And, you know, you'd think, Norm, you know, it'd be easy to track down what his occupation was, just go into the census, right?
That's what you think.
Except the 1890 census was all lost in a fire.
Yeah.
So we don't have any of the records from 1890 at all.
There's a lot of fires that have taken away a lot of that information.
Yeah.
Really? I believe all the 20s. I have warden rosters from either commissioner's reports or warden service rosters that they had printed out. In fact, I just found one. I got it from Fort Kent, and it's in 1928, which is amazing, is the fact that there was like 65 full-time wardens, but there was like 481, don't quote me the exact number, but non-paid deputy wardens throughout the state.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of names on there would, L.L. Bean is on there.
Oh, no kidding.
From Freeport.
Deputy warden.
Yeah. Non-paid game warden.
And that's even harder to track because if they're not on the payroll, it's hard to figure out what they did or what they were, you know, asked to do,
right,
or how they were assigned, because you can't fire a volunteer, right? You know,
well, I suppose you could, but.
You can. It's a little messy. but, you know, when we talk about the state archives, and you and I have to get down there some point so you can do some of this research, you know, we have 100 million permanent records in the state archives, and that represents about 2% of the activity of state government. So a lot of that stuff just was never saved. And you don't know what's going to be important to a future generation. Like something like this, you know, a game warden murdered in the line of duty, that was probably not something that, you know, sure, obviously a murder was very serious, but they didn't make the connection with a warden murdered in the line of duty. It was somebody who was killed in a dispute of some kind. And,
right.
And adjudicated, like, you know, Benjamin Peck, the treasurer who stole something like $94,000, was removed from office, and they're having a hard time finding the court records from that now.
Wow.
I mean, obviously he was sent to jail, but it'd be really interesting to see how that played out. So I think in terms of how we do our business today, you know, I think we do a much more robust job of keeping track of what our law enforcement agencies are working on and making sure that they have the right equipment, that they're properly appreciated and compensated, and this is part of it. In the early days of the Republic, it was just people getting by.
Right, and then, of course, nowadays we have that memorial where people are recognized, officers are recognized for being killed in the line of duty, and back then they didn't, so it was...
That's a relatively new thing.
Yeah, they got lost in the shuffle, but like you said, I think in the 20s, They had a big fire there in Augusta.
Yeah, there was a big fire in Augusta, and there was a fire in Washington, D.C. A couple of, you know, all the military records were lost in that big St. Louis fire in 1973. Something like hundreds of millions of military records were lost.
Yeah, that's so, for sure.
You know, so. So some of the other stuff that you're working along this line, talk about, actually, before you do, let me tell you who's sponsoring this segment of our show, Jim.
Yes, good idea.
We should thank them for their sponsorship of these last 15 minutes.
We do.
Or the half hour, actually. It's General Appliance and Brewer. That's the place to go, Jim, for your camp appliance needs.
You bet.
Whether you're talking about gas lights, gas ranges, gas refrigerators, gas freezers, or the top-of-the-line composting toilets.
Ride the wave, baby.
Ride the wave.
Wave of the future.
General Appliance at 91 Center Street in Brewer is your non-electric connection. It's a family-owned business since the 1920s. Al Elkin has found his niche in these changing energy times. General Appliance is there to serve camp owners with non-electric appliance needs, too.
That's right.
How about that? So they have they service used propane appliances, and they sell parts for all makes and models, including the well-known Servel gas refrigerators. And as for those composting toilets, these are the wave of the future in a conservation-minded world. Totally reliable, odor-free. They have to be seen to be believed.
That's right.
It'll make you crazy looking at these things. And I think we'll see Al at the sportsman shows if he's at all a creature of habit, and I believe he is. If you have a question, a troubleshooting question related to propane appliances, give Al a call at 989-3714 or stop in for a visit at 91 Center Street in Brewer. throughout Maine. That's where they are located.
Well, once you try one of those, you'll have to have one.
Well, we kind of laugh about the wave of the future, but we've all been to camp or where there's an outhouse, and it's really the nastiest part of the trip, isn't it? This takes all that away.
Especially if you don't have anything to read.
Yeah. Or you don't have change for a 10 and there's no toilet paper.
That's right. Three quarters, two dimes, and a nickel are pretty rough.
So we want to thank Al for his sponsorship of this portion of our show. Just like that.
Yes.
So now you can talk about other stuff that you're working on.
Well, the Maine Game Warden Foundation, it's a nonprofit organization that supports individuals and programs and organizations that improve our community. The foundation is operated exclusively for educational and charitable purposes. It has strong roots to the outdoors, so the foundation supports many conservation programs, especially for youth. And I know that we're only a couple of years old, and I say we just because I put myself in it. It's run by the directors and the regular membership are Maine Game Wardens, but it's run by the retired game wardens. But what they've asked me, probably because of my ties to the Northwood Sporting Journal, and they've asked me to be the editor of a magazine.
Yep.
And I've just put out my fourth issue. And basically, it has sponsorships, corporate sponsorships. We have a website that's up now. It's the Maine Game Warden Service Foundation.org. And the magazine itself, you can advertise in it. And it has a message from the president, a message from the colonel. I have an editor's column. But what I do is put in there, the ins and outs of what's going on with game wardens as far as, retirements and promotions, the new academy, any awards that are given out. I have a section in there that highlights any warden kid or wife or the wardens themselves that take a nice fish or bag a buck or a moose or whatever. One of the guys in one of the last issues took a veteran hunter.
Yep.
So we support different groups. The Maine Youth Fishing Game has received grants. 4-H for Bryant Pond has received grants.
So this is supported by the warden service itself, I mean, the individual members.
Yes, but this section is a little bit different. It's you have your association, but we're separate as it's the foundation, and it's because active game wardens can't solicit ads and stuff.
That's right, but the retired guys can.
So we give these grants out, and I do community spotlight, which maybe highlights something that's happened in the community for, like the trash day, maybe.
Sure.
And I do, my favorite article in there is the history. I dig up something that has to do with Maine warden history.
Well, you spend any amount of time with any game warden, especially one of the older guys or the retirees, and they just have one story after them. The late John Ford, who was a great writer, a good storyteller, and he was a retired game warden, I remember one story in particular, a retired game warden told me about when he was first on the job. He was flying with a warden pilot, and they're checking some of these remote fly fishing only trout ponds. And they're probably 500-600 feet up. And the pilot looks out the window and he says, "Yeah, that guy's he's fishing with worms." And they land the float plane and they go make their way through, and sure enough the guy had a bucket of worms, the new warden says, "Well, how'd you know? How could you see worms on the end of a fly line from 500 feet up in the air?" He said, "He'd reach over the side of the canoe and wash his fingers off."
Yeah. Yeah.
So, these are great stories. And it speaks an awful lot to how committed, these folks have been to conservation over the last now almost 140 years that we've had a formal warden service.
Yeah, it'll be 140th anniversary coming up. There was a story that Gary Dumont, he told me about a couple of wardens way up north that Earl Kelly used to fly, help out with flying, and Cash Austin, he was a legendary warden up there. Well, they had gone and worked in the fall, checked out some fields for working night hunters, whatever, and they landed on a small pond. Cash was supposed to get off, and the plan was he was supposed to taxi over by the dock, but there were some rocks there, so what he was going to do was just kind of let it, the tail drift in. Cash got out, was standing on top of the pontoons, and he was just going to step off. And, of course, it was windy, and the plane's running and everything. And, he thought, Earl thought that Cash had jumped off, and he hadn't. And so he kind of maneuvered it around. He started started picking up speed and everything, and he kept hearing this slap against the side of the plane. Well, if you've done any amount of flying in those small planes, usually what happens is when the guy bails out, the seat belt sometimes gets stuck in the door, and the metal part kind of just slaps on the side of the plane, which is what he thought he would have.
So how high did he get before he fell?
Well, he just started getting a little bit of air, and he happened to look over, and there was Cash hanging onto the strut, and his eyes just as big peering in the window, and so he cut the throttle back. But I guess it was quite a while before Cash would talk to Earl Kelly again. But
I just finished reading Gary Dumas' book on the flying game warden.
Yeah,
he had a lot of old stories. Really good.
Yeah, he did. He did that. That one's not in that story.
No,
I happened to get that one when I went to visit him this September.
Yeah. When we honored Moses Jackson as a legendary game warden quite a few years ago now. One of the stories they told about him was how he was chasing a bunch of night hunters, and they got into a canoe and they were paddling across Pushaw Lake, and he grabs a canoe that was next to it, and he starts paddling off after him, and he's catching him. And one of the guys drops his shotgun, and he's under the drops it over the side of the canoe. This is at night. Moses jumps out of the canoe and dives down 25 feet and into the bottom of the lake and pulls up this shotgun so he wouldn't lose the evidence.
Every warden, and as soon as you get a bunch together and they all start talking with each other, it just sparks another story that's happened to them, and they just continue on. They can go on all night.
Well, we have a caller standing by who probably wants to ask a question or pitch in. Good evening. You're on Maine Outdoors. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Tom in Winterport.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Yes, I had a question for that warden.
Okay.
Or a retired warden. I wanted to know if he had any tales about Elmer Knowlton from up in Millinocket.
Well, I don't have any tales about him as far as, catching poachers, because I didn't know him and I didn't work that area a whole lot. But if I remember right, I think Elmer is the only one to have taken a snowmobile. He was the first one to take a snowmobile up to the very top of Baxter.
Yes, I've got a picture of that.
No kidding.
Top of Padden. Yep. He had to stand on the skis right in front of that wooden sign.
Yeah.
Keep the snowmobile from sliding backwards.
Well, I'd like to get you, if Jim would take your name and number, I'd like to get a hold of you so I can get a copy of that picture sometime.
Okay. I'll have to get it from his son, but won't be any problem.
Okay.
Yeah, just stay on the line, Tom, and Norm will take your number down.
Yes.
Appreciate it.
All right.
Other than that, he won the Congressional Medal of Honor, or the Maine Warden's Valor Honor Medal.
Well, he probably did. We'll have to check all that out and get it into the magazine for you.
Yes.
All right. Stay on the line, Tom, and we're going to take your phone number. We got to wrap up the show here pretty quick.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Yeah, so if you have any information for Dave Georgia, you have contact information you want to give out, or
they can go to that website. But the editor, if you were to contact the Bangor office, the Warden Service office, and talk to Joan, I'm sure that she would be just glad to pass on any information. I actually collect and anything to do with memorabilia from the Warden Service, especially the earlier days, old badges and patches and parts of uniforms. I I actually have one that I can wear, one of the first original uniforms.
Yeah, and I've seen you in that, some of the inductions of the new wardens.
Correct.
When you come in behind them. It's really
symbolic.
Very symbolic, and they have a museum down at the Gray Wildlife Park.
Yeah, and someday I hope to have a real good museum where I can display stuff and maybe even be the curator closer to Old Town, Bangor.
Well, it's a pretty cool thing that you've been doing with this, and because, like you say, there's a lot to dig into, especially when you get into the early days, and the information is not right there. You got to go find it, and so we'll help you do that. So, before we cut you loose, we want to thank you, obviously, for coming on the show and taking time out on a Sunday night. We want to thank our callers who've made the show a lot of fun. And, you know, as we go forward, folks, if you have questions about what the Warden Service Foundation is working on, you can check out that website again, which is
the main wardenservicefoundation.org. And you can partner up with corporate sponsorships or you can even get an ad in the magazine itself.
Yeah. And participate in it however you wish. And, I think as this builds out, it's going to be pretty exciting to learn a little bit more about our outdoor heritage and history. You know, I know the Maine Folklife Center has done some work on this from the hunting side and seeing something from those folks who put themselves on the line to make the heritage possible is really important. So we want to thank you for that. So also want to thank Norm and Jim for doing a great job again, as always, guys.
Our pleasure.
So next week we have, who's hosting next week? Do you know, Jim?
Well, I'm not sure. The schedule is kind of messed up right now, but it could be anybody.
Well, I'll be back sometime near the end of February, and one of the things I'm going to try to do is get the new commissioner to come on with us.
Ooh, that'd be great.
So that would be a lot of fun when she gets sworn in and confirmed. So, but until that time, and I come back, we're going to see you next time on
Maine Outdoors.